When we think of the drama of a little, because he was short, because he was unknown, monk coming from India, not speaking good English, not with an accent that people could readily understand, they had to work a little bit to grasp what he was saying, coming from an unknown culture and preaching an unknown religion. It wasn't a religion in the sense of a sectarian religion, but a universal truth. And yet, ideas that were foreign to Americans. And to have so much magnetism that he drew thousands and thousands of people wherever he went. In one city, the mayor gave him the keys to the city, and just everywhere he went, he had tremendous accolades, tremendous honor. And then, settling in Los Angeles, in a church that held only 100 people or so, and lecturing there twice a month, and lecturing in an even smaller church in San Diego, lecturing in the little temple in Encinitas, and not nearly the kinds of crowds coming. It seems like such a contrast between those times of great dynamism and sort of stirring people up, and then the remaining, the last years of his life, which were quietly teaching people, gathering disciples around him. And we think of the life of Jesus also with so much drama, so much intensity, thousands of people following him, the tremendous drama of the crucifixion, the resurrection. And yet after that, the small little group of people that remained. And one is reminded from this, by this, of the fact which we want to stress in our talk this morning, infusing daily life with God's presence. The fact that the spiritual life is really a daily thing, not something that happens at the adventurous, grand, dramatic moments. We all have the idea that come the critical moment, we could be heroic. But it's in the little things that we really develop our spiritual lot, our spiritual habits, our spiritual awareness. It's, as Master used to say, the minutes are more important than the years. And it's very important, even in his life, he showed us a very important truth by bringing those great years of drama down into years of quietly living the life inwardly. And where in the beginning he used to do all sorts of astonishing things in public, when in his last years he did almost nothing in the way of miracles or displays or so on. He would sometimes in his early years, he would have doctors come up and feel his pulse and test him in various ways. And at an instant he could stop his heart. What astounded me, and I've never understood yet, was that he could have two doctors feeling his pulse and have a different pulse in each wrist. God knows how. But he would display all kinds of amazing things. He would have the audience put their hands together like this and say, those who are in tune with me won't be able to take their hands apart. And they'd try and try and try, and they wouldn't be able to until he said no. It wasn't hypnosis. It was a very strong magnetism. The difference between hypnosis and magnetism is that magnetism uplifts you to a higher level of consciousness, whereas hypnosis suppresses you and allows the intrusion of another person's will against yours. But this was lifting them up. That's why he used to say, those who were in tune with me, rather than all of you. Because he wasn't imposing his will. He was bringing them up into his consciousness. He would change people's lives by that force of magnetism. And in daily life, as Jesus said, he who is faithful in little will be faithful also in much. That we need to learn to live the spiritual life, not just on the days that we go to church, the times when we come up to Ananda, the times of special crisis and special need. We find that we respond naturally at those times if we live rightly from moment to moment. A very interesting discovery was made during the Second World War, because they gave people tests to find out who would be good potential commandos? Being a commando was a very highly demanding activity that required a great deal of courage, fortitude, all sorts of things. They found that there really was no correlation between the way people passed their written tests that made it look as if they would be good commandos and the way they actually behaved in the field. Theoretically, they could behave very heroically, or theoretically, they might not seem to behave so heroically. But under the actual crisis, they behaved according to an inner nature that they themselves didn't know. And they didn't behave at all according to the way they had expected. How many times you have seen in your life that you really thought that you had something together at last, and then a test came and you blew it completely? We don't, this is the defect of too much of modern psychiatry, that it tries to make you understand a thing only intellectually. But you don't understand when you understand here. You understand when you understand here. When your life is changed inwardly, then you find that every day, every test that comes, you react in the right way. But it isn't resolution alone that helps, of course. It isn't affirmation, although that helps too. But it's that deep-seated change that is something often independent of your conscious will that determines who you really are. You are a little island above the ocean with a vast body of earth beneath it. And you have to learn how to bring that divine consciousness down into that deeper body of subconscious, which determines your natural response to all situations. This you can't do in a day. As Master said when he wrote about cosmic consciousness, he said of the experience of samadhi that it doesn't come with mere intellectual willingness or open-mindedness. It comes by daily practice of meditation, kriya yoga, devotion, daily practice which gradually brings this down into the subconsciousness, and this takes time. No tree can suddenly pop out of the ground and become a great oak tree. It takes time. It's a day-by-day thing. This is why Lahiri Mahashay gave that saying, banata banata banjai. Trying little by little every day, suddenly there the divine bliss, the victory. And so, every day, if you do the right thing, you will find that it may take a lifetime, it may take many lifetimes. Don't worry how long it takes. If you, in fact, patience, as somebody was saying the other day, and I endorsed her saying, because patience, she was talking of the need for patience, and I said, patience is the shortest path to God. When you have learned patience, when you have learned, there's that wonderful story of Chaitanya, one of the great saints of India, who, in a certain mood that came over him, was telling his disciples, who asked, when he would find God. And each disciple, he would say, he would find God, not Chaitanya who had found God, but the disciple. He said, you will find him in this life, and he felt very good. Or he'd tell another disciple, it'll take two or three lives, and the disciple felt a bit crestfallen. And then there was one disciple who was very close to him, a very highly advanced disciple, and he said, Master, when will I find God? He said, it'll take you another million lives. Everybody gasped, first of all, because they thought so highly of this disciple. Secondly, because, my God, what a burden. It was hard enough for some of them to think two or three lives, and here, a million lives. And then others hardly dared ask for fear of getting a similar answer. But things went on in the satsang, and then they turned around and they didn't see this disciple, and they thought, well, he's probably out there weeping. And they looked out through the door, and there he was dancing in ecstasy. And they said, but didn't you hear what the master said? Yes, my brothers, dance with me in joy. Didn't you hear him promise I would find God? What does it matter, a few million lives, 1 million lives? It doesn't matter. But he promised I would find God. And they were aghast. And then the master called him in. He said, come here. He said, I just wanted people to see of what metal a true devotee is made. And he touched him and he realized God in that moment. Patience is the shortest path to God. Why? Because God is not in the future. God is in the eternal present. And we can only find him when we live in that eternal present. And we can never live in that eternal present if we're impatient. Because impatient means we're wanting something that hasn't come yet. Master said, I get tired of people saying, when will I find God? Say, I have him. Because he is with you right now. And if you live in that thought that he's always with you, you will find all of a sudden, there he is. You have to live with joy. You have to live with love. There's that lovely story Master told about God in heaven. Just a story, obviously. God in heaven sending Narada down to earth to find who the real devotees were. And Narada came down, and he met many devotees, and he wrote down all the names of these great devotees. And then finally he came upon an old man. He was 85 years old. And he said, oh, you've been meditating a long time. Yeah, I've been meditating 65 years. And he said, well, this is great, 65 years of sadhana. He wasn't thinking wisely at 65 years. What's that in eternity? But he said, I'm here from heaven, and I've brought a message. I've brought a mission from God to try to find all the devotees in this world. Oh, you have you? Then why ask your Lord when you go back why he hasn't come to me? Well, Narada was a bit shocked at this one. And he said, I've been meditating for 65 years, and still he hasn't come. And Narada thought, well, that really isn't very kind of God. And so he went on. He wrote this man's name down at the top of the list. He thought, this is a devotee. And then he saw a young man who was a little drunk. He'd been drinking a bit too much. And he was trying to put a post in the ground. He was making a fence. And he just couldn't quite hit that hole in the ground. And as he was weaving around, he was cursing God, why don't you come and help me like this? And Narada was shocked. And he thought, nobody speaks to God like this, blaming God for your own drunkenness and asking God to come when you're not even fit to go to the church and meditate and pray. And so anyway, he stopped because he was charged with the mission of speaking to everybody who called God's name. And so he stopped and talked to this man, although with a sinking heart. And the man said, oh, you're from heaven, are you? Well, then when you get back, for God's sake, please come. Please tell him to come. I keep calling him, and he doesn't come. And Narada was scandalized that this man should presume that God would even think of coming to him. But anyway, he said, all right, I've promised to tell him, so I will. So he went back, and he read this long list of people, and then he came to this hoary old hermit, and started talking about him, and God said, well, it's strange, I don't know him. Lord, I sometimes wonder about you. How come you don't know somebody who's been calling your name 65 years, his name is, and he's repeated it. I'm sorry, I don't know his name. It's not written in my heart. And then he said at the very end of his long list, he started to talk about this drunkard. Oh, yes, I remember. I know him. Lord, you know him and you don't know him. The Lord said, well, just go down and try something for me. You'll understand. He said, tell each of them that I will come, but only after I have finished passing elephants through the eye of a needle. And so he went to the hermit, and he said that God will come, but only after he's finished his job, present job, of passing a whole herd of elephants through the eye of a needle. And the hermit said, who ever heard of passing elephants through the eye of a needle? Goodbye, God, and all your crazy crowd. I've wasted 65 years. I'm going back to enjoy myself for the few years I have left. And Narada was very distressed to hear this. And then he went and he saw this young man who was a little drunker than ever and working on the second pole only. And as soon as he saw Narada, he dropped his pole and ran over with open arms and embraced him. He said, tell me, my Lord, what has he said? And Narada said, well, he's busy right now with a job he's taken on of passing a herd of elephants through the eye of a needle. But as soon as he's finished, he'll come. And the young man said, Oh, he who could pass worlds through the eye of a needle in an instant must be already ready to come. And he started dancing, and he took Narada by the hand and danced and danced, and suddenly they found that God was dancing in their midst. And the story means that you don't find God this way. You don't. God, many things that God does seem quite illogical, in fact. Starting with the question everybody asks, why did you make me? Why create this mess for me to be in? But you don't ever answer those questions this way. And if you live in your heart and love God, he doesn't mind your faults. All he minds is that you love him enough. The minutes are more important than the years. Live every day, every moment, in the thought of him. You don't have to go around. There was one woman who came to Mount Washington back when I lived there, before I lived there, I should say, and she had an idea that if you live the spiritual life, you've got to wear a long black gown and have huge beads that you toll and never smile, always sort of like this. Well, she didn't last a week, naturally. Mirabai, many of you saw the movie of Mirabai. There is a prayer of hers quoted in Autobiography of a Yogi that if God could be found by just telling beads, I would have mammoth beads. And if God could be found just by drinking water, I would swim in the ocean. I'd rather be a whale in the deep. But Mirabai knows that the beloved is only found by love. And it's only through love. Love is more important than anything else. Is it more important than yoga? Of course it's more important than yoga. The benefit of yoga is that it helps you to love more one-pointedly because it directs your energies. But one time Krishna said, this is a story Master told, of Krishna who said to Draupadi, a great woman disciple of his, why don't you practice yoga? And she said, Lord, bless me to help to make it possible because I would love to practice yoga and I'm unable to because I can't take my mind away from you long enough to practice anything else. And he only smiled because that's what the path is really all about. And the practice of yoga is to help you to learn to direct that energy. But don't think that by just practicing yoga, you'll get God. Nothing can give you God. Eternity can't give you God. Only love can give you God. That's why Ram Gopal Muzumdar said that, I don't know what favor I have found with God yet. I have meditated for 20 years, 18 hours a day, and another 25 years, 20 hours a day. I still don't know what favor I have found with God. Because what's a lifetime? What's 100 lifetimes? What's 1,000,000 lifetimes of our effort? If it isn't his grace that gives it to us. Remember, God does it for you, and he doesn't count your faults. But if you love him, then you have superseded the law. This is what St. Paul was trying to say to people. Don't live only in the law. Live in the love of Christ, the love that Christ came to bring to mankind. We make too much of an act that Jesus did for us. This is the language of lazy devotees who want everything done by somebody else. And it's a lovely thought that Jesus did it all. But if all that Jesus needed to do for us was die on the cross, then why did he waste 3 years? He should have gotten up there and gotten it over with right away. Why did he waste all that hot air teaching us things to do if all that was really important was that he get up there on that cross? Not at all. He came to teach us love. He stressed love. He lived love. He showed love so perfectly that, as he himself said, he was willing out of love to give up his life for those he loved. Love was his message, and people lose sight of it. And if we live in divine love, Master, in a talk that I have just finished listening to, and we're working on it, it's ready just about. John, is it completely ready, or...? Just about, that's what I said. Nice to quote your engineer correctly. And at the end of one of his talks there, he says, I'm sick and tired of hearing people talk about karma. Love God. Love is above karma. With love of God, he can destroy your karma in a moment. You don't have to worry about karma. You'd have to live in such a way that you try to get good karma, but that's nothing. That's plodding. The real thing is that if you love God, He takes all your karma. He can take it all in an instant. Living in the presence of God, living in the love of that presence, drinking His name. This is something that we must do day by day. Don't wait for those heroic moments when you're tested. Don't think, well, but when will I be tested? You are tested right now in your forgetfulness. You are tested every moment in the opportunity that it gives you to think of something else but God. Sukadeva, a great saint of India, said, all time is wasted that is not spent seeking God. Lahiri Mahashai said that the divine search is the only work that was given to man. And why do we do other things? Just to keep our minds moving toward Him at least. But the only real work that's important is love. And St. John of the Cross said that one act of love is of greater value to the church than all the activities of priests and nuns who do good works, but without that kind of deep love. So if you want to infuse your daily life with God, remember, it's got to be minute by minute, day by day, and God's presence is with you always. You don't have to keep weeping and saying, when will you come? Why haven't you come? Where are you? It's all right to help direct your mind toward Him, but the fact is, He's always with you. As Master said, He's nearer than the deer. Nearer than the near, dearest, dearer than the dear, dearest of the dear, and closer to you than your closest thoughts. So what you have to do is listen for His presence. Call His name, yes, but also listen. Master used to gently chide those people who thought that it was all only singing God's name. He talked of a group of devotees who were singing every night and keeping everybody awake. Rama, 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 bum, 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 bum. Rama, 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 bum, 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 bum. And he just laughed at this because he said, that doesn't give you God. Listen for His presence. Sing with love. To sing with love once, with deep. You know, Master, one time, I remember I've mentioned this in the path too, somebody wanted to take a photograph of Him. And he said, just a moment, let me go into samadhi. All right. Like that he could go into samadhi. Because he was in that consciousness all the time. He always had the thought of God. Keep the thought of God in a listening way, not just singing at Him. There was this, Ramakrishna laughed at this priest whom he heard once say to an audience, God is dry, you have to make Him sweet with the sweetness of your devotion. And Ramakrishna said, how ridiculous. Where do you think people get their devotion? Your love itself comes from God. Pray for that love. Pray for Him to give you devotion. But pray with the thought that you are His child and He will give you everything. If you pray for anything else, He can give you it. He can give you powers. He can give you phenomena. But if you pray for His love, then He'll play a game of hide-and-seek for a while. Don't worry about it. He's only testing you because for so many incarnations you've ignored Him. And so it's like a lover who putting out all that energy to the beloved, and then the beloved answers, and then the lover plays a bit coy, or usually it's the girl who plays coy or hard to get, but it's only to draw you. God plays in that way. God has been trying to reach to us, and then, as it says in that song that Master sang at one, I think it was Christmas banquet, but it may have been his birthday banquet. Let's see. Mukti dete pari, mukti dete pari, mukti dete, let's see. Mukti dite pari, mukti dite pari, bhakti dite pari koi. I can give you even liberation, salvation, but don't ask me to give you my love. Bhakti, don't ask me to give devotion to you. That's the greatest gift of all. If I give you that, I've given you everything, because I've given you myself. So I'll give you powers, I'll give you freedom, I'll give you anything, but don't ask this, is saying that if you really know what the path is all about, don't ask for these things. See, it's a sort of a backdoor's way of coming in to tell you just exactly the opposite, because this is the only treasure that's really worth having, and it's the one that's hardest to get. So if you start asking for devotion, I've seen many times people on the path, before they come into discipleship, have lots of experiences, and suddenly when they come on the path, they lose them. And they think, well, am I going backwards? No, not at all. There was one yogi in India who developed the power, an odd power, but he could actually, in a lane in India, they didn't have electricity 100 years ago, didn't have it here, come to think of it, and he could turn his back on a dark lane and emit a light from his back that would illuminate the whole lane. A useful power, you might say, but not one that really gives you God consciousness. When he met Ramakrishna, he suddenly lost that power. There was another one who would beat everybody in debate, and Ramakrishna, without knowing, somehow suddenly tuned into it. What this yogi did was, before he entered the room in which they would debate, they had these big scriptural discussions, and he would utter a mantra, and he had the power as a result of uttering that mantra to be invincible. And Ramakrishna, coming into that room without even knowing where it came from, uttered that mantra before this man could, and beat him in discussion. And from that time on, the man didn't have that power. And we find again and again this happening when these people become disciples. When they really come onto the path, they lose that, because God is saying, now, don't look for that anymore. Don't. There was one time when Vivekananda, the disciple of Ramakrishna, in his meditation, suddenly saw at a distance of about 100 miles people in their kitchens in another city cooking and so on. And he felt rather good about this, I suppose. I don't know. But anyway, he came and told Ramakrishna what had happened. And Ramakrishna said, oh, that's too bad. Don't meditate for a few days till this goes away. He didn't want him trapped in phenomena. Sri Yukteswar said that many people who come onto the path and leave materialism seek it on an astral level, in miraculous things, phenomenal things, and so on. He said, don't look for that. Look for love. And when you have that love, you have everything. So remember, to bring God's presence into your heart means to bring it with love, to realize that he's always there. He's watching your most innermost thoughts, because he's even closer to you than those thoughts. So if you have a naughty thought and you think, oh God, I hope you didn't see that one, be comforted. If you understand it rightly, you will be comforted that he knew it all along. And he loves you just the same. One great saint, the Curé of Ars in France, said, if you knew how much God loves you, you would die for joy. That kind of intense love is something man can't even imagine. One disciple, young disciple, came to Rajashi, the foremost disciple of Yogananda, and asked him one day to give him a touch of ecstasy. Rajashi said, if you had that touch now, you wouldn't be able to live anymore. You wouldn't be able to stand your life. Because that kind of joy is just too intense. Why waste time just doing useless things? Spend at least a little time every day meditating. You can't make a huge leap all at once. If you try too hard, you'll fall down. But if you try a little bit every day, you could start out by a little segment. The first thing you do when you wake up in the morning, meditate for 15 minutes. Practice a little Hong Saw, Kriya. Call to God deeply. Never leave your meditation just with techniques. At the end of the techniques, when the mind is still, focused, the heart is uplifted, pray deeply. Practice bhakti yoga. Practice devotion. And then, when you feel his presence, try to keep that presence in your heart. And then try to make it a little bit longer. And then make it a point. Maybe a little clock would be a good idea that chimes every half hour. And every time you hear that chime, make it a reminder. I must think of God. And the next half hour goes by, and remember again, this I must think of God. And bit by bit, it becomes a habit to the point where you're thinking of him in the back of your mind all the time, even when you're laughing and talking and working, still in the back of your mind is that thought. Another thing you can do is keep a phrase in your mind, a mantra, japa they call it. In India, they use a name of God, but they've got thousands of them. Here, it might be a good thing to simply use something like reveal thyself, or come to me, or a line from a song, or sing a chant in your mind all day long. The more you can come, somebody said to me yesterday at our pool party, but do you need a guru to give you this? Can't you do it for yourself? Theoretically, of course, everybody can. In practice, virtually nobody can, because the weight of habit is so strong that it pulls you down. And after a year, you look back and you say, "What I meant to, but why didn't I?" That's why it's very important to come to places like this and be here as often as you can to drink in this magnetism. It's really a question of getting magnetism. I've often thought of all the people who go to art school and how many good artists come out. So many graduates, so few good artists. And very, very rarely do we get one Michelangelo, one Leonardo, one really great artist. Very rarely. And can we say that if we do, that the school did it? Not at all. They did it. It's something besides what you learn. It's not the techniques only. It's also the art. And the art of it is something that you get by magnetism. It's a very subtle understanding. But that magnetism, if you live, for example, with other artists, gradually you absorb some of their magnetism and you understand, even without knowing how it happened, you understand how to paint. Everything that we do, I have seen, and this is something Master taught, that if you want to do something new that you don't know how to do yet, get into that magnetic flow, and you'll find that in that flow, the understanding comes. It's something you can transmit, but it is not something you can teach intellectually. So it is that being in the presence of saints, as it says in the Sanskrit chant, Kannamatpi sajana sangati reka bhavati bhavarnava tarane noko. Even a moment in the presence of a saint will be your raft over the ocean of delusion. Even a moment, if you absorb that presence, to be in the presence of devotees, to be there where devotees chant and sing, this is the most important thing devotees can do. The greatest work you can do in your life is to come to such places and mix with such people. In the Indian scriptures, they talk of the importance of good company, satsanga, as the most important thing of all, because it gives you that desire to find God, without which 1,000 saints couldn't give it to you. You have to get it inside, but if you attune yourself to their presence, then you take it from them. They don't give it to you. You take it. But you have the chance to take it there. And how much chance do you have to take it in nightclubs and business offices and at Macy's? Not that much. Because the weight of other vibrations, other magnetism, and your own past habits pulls you down. So make it a point. This is a very serious thing I'm saying. Come here as often as you can and be drenched in the peace of high vibrations. Be with saintly souls as much as you can. That will change your life even without your knowing it. And you will see after a few years that you're a different person. People who live here, we see a change in them even in a week. In a year, 2 years, the change has become extraordinary. And where that person who came at first was very restless, nervous, now we see them very calm and shining and peaceful. Magnetism is very important. And the most magnetic thing of all is to have God's presence with you always. Chant his name, listen for his inspiration, the whisper of his inspiration in your soul. Thank you all.